This episode is brought to you by Boncharge. Are you stressed out? Do your muscles ache? Are you looking for a way to get better sleep? Well then, Boncharge is for you. What's Boncharge? Boncharge is a company that makes an infrared sleeping bag that is serving as a sauna. I'll say that again. It's an infrared sleeping bag that actually acts as an in-home sauna. You plug it in, it heats up, you lay down inside of it, you do absolutely nothing, you get a sick sweat session in, you calm down, you decompress, life is easy. You get out, you dry off, you unplug it, you dry your infrared, your little sleeping bag off, you put it away, and you're done. If you want to get the benefits of this all in your house without having to go to a spa, without having to go to a resort, or go to some nasty, disgusting gym and get into their sauna that you don't even know how well they're cleaning it, just go. I'm gonna just not even going to give you a website. Just Google Boncharge. That's Boncharge. That's Boncharge. And if you put in the code Mahoney, Mahoney, that's Mahoney, you will get 15% savings. If you can't remember any of this, don't worry. It'll be in the show notes. Just click on the link right in the show notes. All right, enjoy the rest of your day. Bye. Welcome to another episode of 6 Minute Monday, where I give you 6 tips and tricks to make you more efficient and effective in the weight room, the boardroom, and on a football field. And I'm going to give you a recap of what happened at this weekend's Tag Team Challenge. So here we go. Tip number one. Actually, there is no tip number one. So in this week's 6 Minute Monday, I'm going to spend about 6 minutes telling you a little story about my black book. And it's not like the traditional black book that most men have. There's nobody's phone number in that black book. What I have is a black book of football secrets. It is legitimately a 10-subject notebook. And it has every great idea that I've either come up with, experimented with, seen, researched, heard, whatever, with respect to the game of football that I've collected over the last 20 years. And right now, I'm currently in the second edition of that black book. So what do I mean by second edition? I mean first edition. I filled up my black book. And over time, you know, you're writing with pen and paper, things get, you lose space in one area. And maybe you have too much stuff in one section of that black book. Or maybe something becomes obsolete. Or maybe there's a totally new philosophy on the game of football. So the second edition, I have a new black book. And Now that one is actually obsolete, and now I need to go through and rewrite the entire thing from beginning to end. This way I can more easily find stuff. So what people say, why do you have this black book? Well, for me, when I'm in the heat of a season, or if I'm making a scheme, like a playbook, I need to look through this black book, and I can say, oh, what's a great play for this situation? What's a great strategy and practice for this situation? It's all in that black book. Now, some people will say, why don't you have this? Why do you have it on pen and paper? And why do you have to keep rewriting this book? And part of me is saying that too. And it's stressing me out a little bit. Because I wish I did have it in a computer. This way, if I found a bunch of new techniques and I ran out of spot in one section of that black book, I wouldn't have to rewrite the entire black book. So in a way, it is extremely inefficient. And in a way, it is massively, massively stressing me out. But in another way, by that act of writing that pen to paper, I truly believe that I am infinitely learning more and I'm retaining more than if I just put it inside of some software. I've learned over the course of my life that, at least for me, and I know there's other studies that verify this, but for me, that act of writing pen to paper legitimately helps me to learn and retain that information. So now, the reason I also have to go through this black book is I've spent the better part of 2 years, maybe three, collecting offensive plays. I've been looking on Instagram, I'd save them to my files. If I watched something from the NFL or college, I would take a video of it on my phone or on my computer and lock it into my computer. And I just had this collection of offensive plays, or maybe this collection of offensive strategies. But I never actually put it into anything. I just had this collection of plays. It's like having a collection of ingredients, but you don't cook anything with it. Right? I got all this stuff, but what am I going to do with it? Now I got to make a meal. So what's stressing me out, how am I going to take this stuff? And now I have to rewrite my black book again. So here is my methodology, and I have to continually reinforce this in my head. And this is kind of important when we get to productivity and efficiency and experimentation. So this is why I'm telling you all these things instead of giving you 6 tips and tricks. So I have all these plays. I need to take it and now actually do it with something for the team that I am coaching. So what I've decided to do over the past 3 months is I had to get all these plays in one spot. So I had things on Instagram. I said I had things on my computer. I had things locked in my phone. What I did was I literally, in an interim scrapbook, is I, just as quick as I could, wrote down those plays. And I'm talking hundreds and hundreds of plays. Again, this is 3 years of me finding stuff. 3 years of me finding stuff. So step number one was I was collecting all this information. Step number two, I began to basically take an interim step at categorizing this information. See, I had all these plays on Instagram, but now I need to put all the screen plays together, all the play action plays together, all of the run plays with an option to throw, like an RPO. All those things were bucketed together. And I'm not going to go into all the gory details and share all my trade secrets, but all those things were put in buckets. So again, maybe screens, maybe play action, maybe RPO, maybe gadget plays. They're all in sections in this interim scrapbook, but it's completely illegible, and it's in an interim scrapbook. So now my next thought is, okay, now I got to take this stuff and put it into my new black book. But then my thought was, oh my God, what if I do this wrong? And then again, I got to make another black book. So the lesson here that I've had to tell myself, and maybe I'm making this part of the podcast to share with you the things that go through my mind, especially as a person who likes to experiment, especially as a person who believes in continuous improvement. So I started putting this book together. I'm like, what if I miss a play? What if I put a play in the wrong section? What if I put a formation in the wrong section? Because I'm putting everything in there. Crazy formations I've seen. Awesome formations I've seen. You know, all these little strategies are going into this black book. What if I mess this up? And I've also thought, you know what? I'm going to have multiple black books. I'm going to have a black book for offense. I'm going to have a black book for special teams. And I'm going to have a black book for defense. Because I've realized, even though I have this 10-subject binder, there's not enough room. There's not enough room. And that's kind of what happened. I used to be just a defensive guy, so that I had room. Then I expanded into a special teams guy, and I started to run out of room a little bit. Then I started really getting obsessed with the air raid offense, and that's when I completely ran out of room. So now my thought is, I'm going to have 3 10-subject books. Don't freak out here. But the point is, my knowledge is growing, my library is growing. So now I'm going to have 3 10-subject books. Right now I'm solely working on offensive stuff. And as I'm starting to transcribe this information from my interim book into my actual black book, by the way, one more step here. I have to take stuff from my existing black book and also bring that into my new black book. So there's a lot of things going on, and it was stressing me out. The point that I want you to take home is that it shouldn't. One, every time I write this stuff down, I'm going to learn. I'm going to absorb. I'm going to become a little smarter. Two, who cares if this new black book isn't perfect? It's never going to be perfect. At some time, that's going to be obsolete. But the process is better than the outcome. I shouldn't be looking for this perfect book at the end that I could say, I'm done. It'll never be done. It'll never be done. There's more plays that I have in that book than you can ever run in 10 seasons. The bottom line for me, so coach, why are you doing it? Why are you doing it if you have all these plays? Aren't you the minimalist? Why aren't you the guy who looks at simplicity? I am. And for me, I'm thinking with the end in mind. I'm thinking with the end in mind, meaning when you're in the heat of a season, you don't have time to look up stuff and think. I want to be able to go in and just say, I need a crazy formation. Bang. I need a play action pass for this run. Bang. I want to be able to go in and do that during the season. So I'm putting in the work now while I have time. And I'm putting it into this black book so that I can find it during the season. Now, it's about the process. It's about the process with a goal in mind. So if you want to take this into training, it could be the same exact thing. You got all these workouts. Which ones do you pick? You're writing a program. Who cares? Right? You're never going to have the perfect program. It's all about the process. Are you getting to the gym? Yes. Are you staying healthy? Yes. Are you getting stronger? Yes. Are you getting faster? Yes. There's going to be 1,000 workouts that you'll never use. But the awareness of them may help build you the program that you need right now. And again, it's about the process, not the outcome. It's having that goal, but again, it's not about the outcome. The goal is driving you through the process. The goal is what keeps you going. Say it's about work or about anything. It doesn't matter what it is. There's a lot of learning lessons here. Yeah, it's my stupid little project that I'm doing with pen and paper with plays, but apply it to anything in your life. Anything. I talked about training because this is a training podcast, but it could be with any single thing in your life. So again, just the key points are, it'll never be perfect. Experiment, 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 and get this mindset of continuous improvement. And also remember that there's really not a waste if you're learning. I know the world is obsessed with automation and digitization and trying to have all these fancy things, but there is a beauty in learning. and retaining and having your mind learn twice as you're writing. And sometimes being inefficient actually is more effective. Not all the time, but sometimes the inefficiencies of trying to learn something, the struggle to try and learn something, is absolutely more effective than just having that answer handed to you. So there's a lot of little lessons within these lessons here, and I'm hoping that guys are able to connect the dots and bring them home. So that's it. So part of this was selfish. I needed to get this off my chest because I was stressing myself out, and maybe I was just talking to me here. Maybe this podcast was for me, but maybe for some of you other guys, maybe there's other things going on in your life where you could say, okay, you got this big giant thing. How do you break the project? And there's another thing, a little lesson within the lesson. I'm breaking it into small chunks. Step one, collect the plays. Step two, categorize the plays in a scrapbook. Step three, transfer those plays over into a new scrapbook and transfer them within subcategories. Bottom line is you take a big project, you break it into small chunks, you experiment, you continuously improve, and you worry about the process, not the outcome that drives you to your goal. All right, take that with you. That's all I got with respect to my 6-Minute Monday portion of this podcast. Now we're going to get into what happened at this weekend's Tag Team Challenge. So once again, there is controversy at Advanced Trading. Once again, what happened? Well, two things happened. One, the night before our training session, Sean Mulligan texts me and says, Coach, I got to work tomorrow. I probably have to work tomorrow. Is there any way you could bump the training session up from 6:30 to 6:15? Sean Mulligan's basically, he's never asked me for anything, like ever, in the history of Advanced Trading. He said, can you bump this thing up? And I got a soft spot for Sean Mulligan, and it's especially a soft spot because he was the guy that got into a car accident 2 weeks ago and couldn't actually get to the training session 2 weeks ago. So, and I want him to be a part of this program. He's a huge part of the program when he's there. He's a father. He's a fireman. He's got a crazy schedule. So whenever he's there, it's a better day. So I don't normally do this for everybody, but I did it for him because of the situation that was going on, and particularly because he had gotten in the car accident right in front of our training session right before we were about to start. So I thought, you know what? We're going to do it for this guy. And normally, I would poll the group and say, is everybody available? But it was creeping up on 7:30, 8 o'clock at night. And I just said, guys, we're bumping this up to 6:15. Like, we're just doing it to help out one of our brothers, and that's it. So that's kind of part of the story. The other part of this, not kind of, it's a big part of the story. The other part of the story is that my nephew, Chris DeMunda, he calls me the night before, and he says, Uncle George, can I come to your training session tomorrow? Christopher, absolutely. So Christopher was in our group about 2 years ago. He made a real big impact in the short time he was there. He now works for Con Ed. He works nights. He works weekends. He's really into fitness. He's a guy I would love to have back in the program. But right now, even if he wanted to, he can't because he is legitimately working overnights and weekends. And he just happened to have off this weekend that he wanted to come. But Chris DeMunda, as we'll call him from this point on, DeMunda is not on a team. So I'm thinking, what do I do with DeMunda? Does he come and just work out and then watch the challenge? I don't know. I'll figure it out when we get there based on how many people actually show up to this training session. So we get to the training session, and it's 6:15, and almost everybody's there but two people. That's right. I said two people. Now, the guys listening to this podcast might think I was one person that was missing, but it was actually two. Because as I am setting up the sensor at 6:15, it's turning into 6:16. Who pulls up but Tom Galley? So Tom Galley is a dude. He has the most points in Advanced Training right now. He's just a dude. Tom Galley shows up at 6:15 and gets onto the field at 6:16. Tom Galley is part of the team of dudes. I said, you know what? I'm not going to say anything. We changed the time. I'm not going to say anything to anybody. I don't care. We start warming up, and I realize someone else from the dudes is not there. Nick Carroll. He shows up at 6:30. Carroll tells us, look, I put my phone on Do Not Disturb. I didn't realize the change in time. My bad. Okay. Now the wheels are turning in my head. All right, what do I do? Do I dock points? Do I give people penalties? What do I do? So I call over Armato. I call over Cortese. They're the captains of both teams. And I say, listen, I'm going to give you guys a choice. Here's what I'm going to do. I am willing to forget about Carroll. I even ignored Galley at that point. I'm going to forget about Carroll and not apply any penalties. But Armato, I'm going to let you make the choice, if that's the case, what to do with DeMunda. You can either put him on Cortese's team, you could put him on your team, or you can have him just watch. Amato kind of like spits out like, I think I'll have him just watch. I think he said I'll just have him just watch, but as he's saying it, or I might have said it right before, I said, you know, whatever you choose, you could change this kid's life. Because maybe he gets on a team, maybe he gets super inspired to come back to advanced training, and maybe he has some life changes with his job or his social life or whatever, and he wants to come back. So I love him. He's my godson. I'd love to have him there, and it's always a better day when he shows up. So I say this to Armado. He says, I'm just going to have him watch. I say, okay. About 10 minutes into the workout, Armado says, listen, I changed my mind. I'm going to have him be part of our team. Now, this is critical information for, I don't know, a few reasons. One, Armado's team, the Golden Company, has 7 guys show up that day. Now, with the addition of Demunda, they have 8. Cortese's team has 5 guys show up, so now there's a difference in 3. Now, the point of this Cortese's team calling themselves the Dudes is that they say that they are dudes and they don't need as many people. And for the most part of the season, they're right. In fact, their dudes show up and they won 5 straight weeks in a row. So now this gives an extra person to Armado. But Armado is kind of already playing Russian roulette because Demunda, he's a little banged up. He tweaked his hamstring playing basketball in a league that he's in. He can't sprint. And maybe he's a liability. So the point of dudes is you're better off without liabilities. You're better off just having a couple dudes to carry everything. So maybe Armado made the wrong choice. I don't know. At least at this moment, I don't know. Okay, fine. So now I say no penalties for Carroll being late. I ignore the fact that Galley was 1 minute late. There's nothing to go on there. And we say Demunda is on Armado's team. He for this day and this day only, he is part of the Golden Company. So here's the challenge. I'll repeat it as quickly as possible. I went into more depth last week. There's an 8. Yes, Armado's team has 8 people. And there is an 8-legged event. Someone does a 25-yard slider. They get up. They sprint 25 yards. They tag a guy who is sitting on a bucket. That guy in a bucket pulls a sled with 140 pounds on it 15 yards. When he's done, he gets up. He sprints 25 yards. He tags somebody who's on sliders. They slide 25 yards. They go and they tag somebody who's sitting on a sled. And they pull a 10-yard sled, it's a 10-yard chain with 230 pounds on it. They then take that sled, they turn it completely around, and they have to pull that sled back another 10 yards. That sled must be over the end of a goal line. If you were doing your math before, we went 100 yards the entire length of a football field. Now that sled, after it went that first 10 yards, has to get pulled back around the other end of that goal line and face in the opposite direction, and you repeat the drill over again. You do a 10-yard sled pull, a guy gets up, he sprints to somebody at the 25-yard line, that guy does a 25-yard slider, he slides 25 yards to a guy who's sitting on a bucket, that guy on a bucket pulls a sled with a 15-yard sled with 140 pounds on it, he gets up, he sprints 25 yards, he goes to the last guy who then slides 25 yards. Woo! That was exhausting. That is the challenge. I'm exhausted talking about it. Imagine how exhausting it is doing it. So, on paper, if you have 8 guys, this is much easier to do because everybody only has to do 1 length. And you notice that things on this field had to be resituated each time. Maybe it's a slider, maybe it's a sled, maybe it's a second sled. So the more guys you have, the more fresh they will be, and you'll have more people able to focus on setting up the drill versus actually doing the drill. So right there, on paper, Armado has made the wise move to take Demunda on his team, and it's a double win. Not only that, he keeps the dudes with only 5 guys. So the dudes go first, and I'm not going to go into all the gory details, but a couple of things stood out to me. One, they had to have guys go multiple lengths. And one of those guys going multiple lengths was Tommy Yurchek, who did the sled pull, and he absolutely and totally killed it. And Yurchek is back for, like, spring break. So this guy hasn't even been training with us all year. He just came back in full form. Awesome job, Yurchek. I loved it. The other thing that stood out to me was that before they set up, I'm kind of eavesdropping, and I'm listening to how Cortese is doing an awesome job of leading his group through what they're going to do and how they're going to do it. And it could be confusing. There's only 5 guys. They got to figure out who's going twice, who's going on what event. And I was really, really impressed with Cortese's ability to clearly articulate to his crew exactly how they were going to do it. And then thirdly, the other thing that stood out was that Cortese He had to go multiple times, and I'm pretty sure he puked multiple times during this event. Critical foreshadowing to later on in the story. He puked multiple times, he went multiple times, and it wasn't like he puked and did a bad job. He puked and did an awesome job. So he got up and said, "I drank too much water before I got here." And you know what? The fourth thing that stood out, this is actually a very critical thing, is that at the very end of the first half, so the first 100 yards, after you pull that 230-pound sled, you have to turn that 230-pound sled around the goal line. So in step one of this, you're sitting at the goal line on a bucket, and you pull the 230-pound sled to you. You then have to turn it around. That's now facing out of the goal line, but it can't go over the goal line. So as they do that, they expertly do it. And their only hiccup, the only hiccup they had in the entirety of this 8-length event, which had multiple transitions, the only hiccup they had was that the chain fell off the sled. That's it. Now, that's a pretty big hiccup. The chain falls off the sled. Not my problem, their problem. So they have to go put the chain back on the sled, resituate the sled, and then continue the drill. But they finish in 2 minutes and 7 seconds. I think it was like 207.2. Pretty damn good. And again, that was literally the only hiccup. So the dudes go first. They go 207.2. Up next, the Golden Company. And they go. And I'll say, the first half of that event, I think both groups probably got back to the other side of that field in about a minute. But when they turn that sled around, so Hezdra does a slider. He finishes his slider. He tags, I think, Derradita. They do the sled pull. He pulls that sled through the goal line. They turn the sled around. They set it up for Baraji to now pull it out of the goal line. But now the sled is like fully, completely over the goal line. It's too far forward. So they got to push it back. So while Derradita is pulling the chain forward, Hezdra is trying to now prowl the sled back, and the ground is scorched earth. It's a 230-pound sled. The ground is scorched earth, and Hezdra is now trying his hardest. He's a strong dude. He's trying his hardest to push this thing over, and he can't budge it. I think Derradita has to run back. They push it back, and I'm pretty sure they lost about 10 to 15 seconds in this process. In my head, I'm like, it's over. It's over. There's no way they recover from this. Then Baraji goes and expertly does this sled pull of 230 pounds like it's water. Bop, 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 boom. He gets up. He sprints. He tags, I think, Shalasi, who slides like he's got a jet engine attached to his hips. So he goes 25 yards. I think he tags Weintraub, who does the sled pull. And I might have Weintraub and Shalasi mixed up. It was a couple days. Anyway, Shalasi's doing the sled pull. Sorry, Weintraub does the sled pull, and bang, he knocks it out. So now these guys have made up every second of that time. Every second of that time that they lost trying to push that sled back, they make it up. And who does this come down to? The last person on the last leg, Demunda. It comes up to Demunda, who clearly has a hamstring issue, hasn't done any sort of this work training that we've done in 2 years, and you know these sliders can pop up, right? A slider pops out, it's over, Johnny. He's got a slider at 25 yards, and he's got to get there before 207.2. So he gets on the sliders. He's going. Everybody's screaming at him. He crosses that line at 205.70, and the Golden Company gets their second win of the year. And now the outrage begins. Every single variable that I talked about before, Carroll being late, Galley being late, Mulligan having us change the time, Demunda being a free agent, Demunda being a ringer, all these things add up in this culmination of frustration. Some people are happy, some people hate me. It's the business we're in. So now, as the rules state, the winning team gets to pick two people from the losing team to go head-to-head in a competition. Some weeks, this happens twice, so there's two groups of people that go head-to-head. So it's like one matchup, then another matchup, and some weeks it happens once. So I tell Cortese, listen, I gave Armato a choice, now I'm going to give you a choice. Your choice is, do you make this one head-to-head competition, and afterwards, the winner of that competition rolls the dice. So we have dice, and those dice have six sides, and on two of those sides, there's a C. If you win the competition, you roll the dice. If you get a C, you get to challenge anybody you want from the other team to go head-to-head against you. Or, Cortese, do you want just two head-to-heads, where four people from your team go in, they go into this loser's bracket, this head-to-head challenge, and one versus one is one challenge, one versus one is another challenge, so you'll have two winners and two losers. I believe that at this moment in training where we're at right now, he wisely said, let's go one person, one team, one group of head-to-heads, and we'll roll the dice. Right now, at this moment in the competition where we're at in the season, week 7, I think that's a good idea. He's smart. I told you a couple weeks ago. This guy's very smart. He's a good strategist. So the other team huddles up. They get together. They talk about who they want. I got some inside scoop from Demunda. They said, oh, look, this Cortese guy, he's shot. He puked multiple times. So they pick him. And they pick him to go against Galley. Now, I said, this is kind of like playing Russian roulette. Because whoever wins, if they roll that C, they're going to come back for you. So you got to figure out what the challenge is, what people are good at, and who's going to come back to get you. So these guys are both really good. Like, they're both really good. And this thing involves a 25-yard slider, a sprint. They're both very fast. And they're both really good. Now, like, Cortese used to not be great at the sled pull. Now he's really good at the sled pull. Galley's really good at everything. So they pick Galley. They pick Cortese. They have Galley go first. And Galley finishes in 28. Oh, let me even say what the challenge is. The challenge was, basically, it was the first quarter of that event. You're going to slide 25 yards, get up, sprint 25 yards, sit down on a bucket, and pull the sled, 140-pound sled into you 15 yards away. So that's the challenge. So Galley goes, finishes in 28.8 seconds. Cortese goes. He actually beats Galley. He beats Galley to the sled by a second. But he finishes in 31.3 seconds because he doesn't have the same awesomeness level of pulling the sled that Galley does. So he does a really awesome job. I'm not going to say he didn't. Cortese did an awesome job. And remember, he puked before. He did multiple lengths in the competition before. The fact that he was able to slide faster and sprint faster than Galley was pretty impressive. But he just couldn't get it done with the sled pull. And now Cortese loses. He gets his second loss of the season. And now he is out. He is out of these head-to-head competitions. So him, Shalacy, Derradita, all three of them are now out of head-to-head competitions because they are the first guys with two losses. Cortese, clearly not happy. Cortese is a man of passion. He gave it everything he had, and he immediately showed his frustration. But now, on to Galley. Galley, he gets to roll the dice. I said to Armato, you're playing Russian roulette. What are you guys going to have to go against Galley here? I don't want to go against Galley. I would never want to go against Galley. Galley rolls the dice. Brrr. And it flips over on nothing. Blank. No one. No, they. Woo! Golden Company lives to fight another day. He doesn't have to call anybody out from the Golden Company. So that's it. Right now, Galley, with that win, is sitting on top. He is ranked number one. He has 19 points. The next two closest guys have 14 points. And that is Shalacy and Cortese, both of which are now out of head-to-head challenges. So there's strategy being played on both sides of the fence here. And really, Armato, I said to him again, you played Russian roulette. He said, I might have, but I won. And yep. Look, when you win, everything's great. When you lose, you go back and you sit home and you question everything. Today it all worked out, Armato. Golden Company, it all worked out. The chips fell in your direction this week. Having said that, next week, the challenge, I'm telling you right here. I'm not even telling you exactly what it is. Go do your research. The challenge next week is the challenge we did last year. We did it in honor of Physical 100. We're going to do it again. And I'm just going to say that there's going to be punishment. People are going to be punished. That's enough. That is enough of a clue for you guys to figure out what this challenge is. That is enough of a clue. So do your research. I'm not saying anything else. That's it. All right, people. Enjoy the rest of your week. Bye. This episode is brought to you by Zero Shoes, a company that is perfectly named. Why? Because when you're wearing their shoes, you feel like you're walking around completely and totally barefoot, a.k.a. like you're not wearing any shoes, a.k.a. like you are wearing zero shoes. Now, we've all heard the benefits of barefoot training, but who wants to walk into a gym without any shoes on your feet? First of all, it's gross, and second of all, it's disgusting. Now, the other benefits of zero shoes is not only are they functional, but they're also fashionable. So, you've seen many a time people walk in the gym with these minimalist shoes and they look like a freak, not with zero shoes. You're going to blend right in. Also, they have a wide toe box so that your toes are not all scrunched together in the front like they normally are with any standard training sneaker or cleat. Now, to get your shoes, go to zeroshoes.com/go/MahoneyAT. Again, that's zeroshoes.com/go/MahoneyAT. And that zero is spelt with an X. It is X-E-R-O. Again, I'll say it again. It's X-E-R-O. Get your zero shoes today.